Blog Talk Radio.
Now let's set the record straight. There's no argument over the choice between peace and war. But there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it in the next second. Surrender. Admittedly, there's a risk in any course we follow other than this, but every lesson of history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement. And this is the specter our well-meaning liberal friends refuse to face, that their policy of accommodation is appeasement. And it gives no choice between peace and war, only between fight or surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to back and retreat, eventually we have to face the final demand, the ultimatum. And what then? When Nikita Khrushchev has told his people, he knows what our answer will be. He has told them that we're retreating under the pressure of the Cold War, and someday, when the time comes to deliver the final ultimatum, our surrender will be voluntary, because by that time, we will have been weakened from within spiritually, morally, and economically. He believes this because from our side he's heard voices pleading for peace at any price, or better rev than death, or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet. And therein lies the road to war, because those voices don't speak for the rest of us. You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the Pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard around the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay, there is a point beyond which they must not advance. Winston Churchill said, the destiny of man is not measured by material compositions. When great forces are on the move in the world, we learn we're spirits, not animals. He said, there's something going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which, whether we like it or not, spells duty. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
It'll be more than 1,000 years of darkness. Joseph Gibson podcasting live, understanding the times in which you live today, 7:33 p.m. from Greensboro, North Carolina. I'll be taking calls here shortly. And the phone number is 657-383-0616. Press the number 1 after you're connected, and I will unmute your phone there so you can talk or bring up whatever you want to bring up, whatever topic you want to bring up. But we got several topics here hopefully we'll address here tonight. Before I do here, I'm going to try to get this congressman on the telephone here and see if we can get Tim on out there in California. Let me call his office. I haven't tried this yet, so most of them have, of course, abandon their offices. They work from their vacation homes, you know, in Puerto Rico and, you know, wherever else they go. Probably China, too, you know. We know most of them are in bed with China. So they're not in their office usually. We used to be able to get a hold of them, but when Trump was in there, but now that Biden's in there, they, you know, they got the blank checkbook out. So, but I was just talking to a diehard liberal there about 2 hours ago at the store, and well, I tell you, where do these people get their mindset from? I mean, this guy comes out of it, he's like, he says, you know, the Democrats are trying to help the people, but the Republicans, they just step, they just they want to balance the budget. I mean, this guy's just rambling. It's like he's in a trance, a zombie mode, you know, and you can't say nothing on the contrary. You could bring up a cold, hard, diehard fact to him, and he'd just deny it. Just deny it. And then if you really back him in the corner, they go crazy. You know, the brains just get rewired and then they go berserk. Or you get the stunned look. Ooh, their eyes glaze over. Their pupils dilate, you know, to a pin, a little tiny little pin. You ever see that one? I mean, these libtards are just completely nuts. And they are destroying America from within, and they're doing it quickly, and they're doing it so fast right now that people can't even catch up to fight them and stand in their way anymore. And we, the people, have got to stop these libtards. And I'm not saying vote Republican either, okay? There's other alternatives, and it has to be done. People have got to get involved. This H.R. 1 that's coming out, oh, Lord, dude, you will only have socialist Democrats in the White House and in all offices across the country if this goes through. And it will go through. I guarantee you that. But I've got phone calls here waiting in the wings here. Let me try this congressman real quick here, and then I'll take your calls. Let me see if I can get a hold of him real quick here out in California.
Thank you for calling the Fresno office of Congressman Jim Costa. Due to public health concerns, this office location will be under a modified operation status until further notice. We are still conducting official business via telework. If you need immediate assistance, please leave a message and be sure to include your contact information, and a member of the Fresno staff will return your call. Thank you.
Yes, how you doing? My name is Joseph Gibson. I'm calling from a radio show right now. We're podcasting live from about 7:30 until 9:30. If someone from your office can give me a call, you said if it was immediate concern, you'd get right back to us. That's what the message says. So I'm going to give you my show number. It's 657-383-0616. Press 1 when you're connected, and I'll get you right through. I'll be on for the next 2 hours. So surely that, hopefully someone, one of your staff is checking the messages. And this is a live podcast. It'll be live. There's nothing scripted here, so if you can give me a call back, I'd really appreciate it. Again, the phone number is 657-383-0616. And again, press the number 1. Someone from your office, if they can get back to me, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you very much. God bless America. Okay. All righty. All right. I'm sure they heard that. Thank you for using Blog Talk Radio after I hung up there. That's what you usually hear. Now, there, you heard the message, everybody. You are the witness. Here, we're going to talk facts here. We'll see if his office, one of his constituents, will call me back. I seriously doubt it. All right, first call here, Connecticut. Go ahead, Northeast.
And you really think they're going to call back?
No.
That's
no,
a
they're
laugh.
Not. And I...
No, you were speaking originally about how you were talking to this gentleman who seemed to be a liberal or another one of those left-wing nut jobs, and I just couldn't help, you know. It's always nice to talk to them to have some fun, but you should really try to avoid it at all costs because you can't talk to them. If there's a Democrat out there, you can't talk to them, especially if they're in the middle or on the left, because that's exactly what happens. You will talk to them, and as you talk to them, they will realize that what you're saying has some truth, and what they've heard on CNN for all these years could be a lie. Then they start getting belligerent. Then they start arguing with you. And when you come up with more truths that goes totally against what the news is telling them, they get completely out of control, and they start swearing at you and using four-letter words and everything. And if you continue just a little bit more, what happens is they get up and they just run away because you've broken through their shell a little bit. And you're just not allowed to do that with these people because they can't handle it. And that's generally the way it is with all of them. I just thought I'd throw that in there. So try not to talk to them, only if you want to have some fun.
Yeah, well, you heard the voicemail that was left, and I said it before I called the congressman's office. I said they don't operate in their offices no more because they use this pandemic as an excuse to go to their vacation homes in Puerto Rico and everywhere else in China, probably, and the traitors that they are, these criminals. And, you know, so and they're using this. Why can't they go to their office and work? Why? You know, it's like this little runt there that, what's his name, Fucci, Fauci, or whatever he is, that the little runt there with the who walks around with two masks on. You know, Rand Paul reamed him a new one, huh? Oh, I wish I had that audio. I'd want to play that, actually, where he just grill, and, you know, he just totally made him into a tinier peon than what he is, the maggot that he is, that Fauci, that's his name there, the guy with the COVID there who tells everybody that they have to wear a mask for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, he makes more per year than the president does, than the president, and you know, than Biden or Trump made. He gets more per year than them.
I mean,
the reason why they're not going to their offices is if they're scared shitless. That's why Pelosi had a fence erected around it, and she has the army there or whatever too, because they are scared shitless. They just won't say it because they know what could happen.
Yeah, they do. And what almost did happen is they should have been arrested. They should have been taken into custody. And there's a jail right there at the Capitol. And they should have been housed there. And a trial from the people should have been convened. They should have called in some judges or elected some judges right there. We could have held a special election, we the people. And they could, you know, have their juries to call in their maggot attorneys or whoever they got. And we could have had a trial right there for the crimes that they've committed. I mean, we could name off probably a dozen right off the top of our head. We'll start with murder, okay? All right. I mean, because that's what they should be charged with. I mean, contempt of constitution, maybe, which carries, I think, a death sentence, actually, or life in prison, one or the other. I forget. Contempt of constitution. Look that one up. I may be wrong. But we could think of dozens of charges that they should be brought up on, but or indicted by a grand jury or something. You know, I mean, these people have got to be held accountable. Look at what they're doing.
That's it. They don't want to be held accountable. And doesn't our Constitution say we could redress our government for grievances? There was no problems there on January 6th. They ran and they had diarrhea all over the floor. They did. Our politicians did not go out and talk to anyone that was out there. There were no problems. The only person that got shot and killed there was a girl who was shot by one of the officers, and she wasn't even armed. That's in the first place. The second place is they work for us. They're our employees. We're not their employees. It's our house that we were getting into, not theirs. We paid for it,
right?
The people. We pay to heat it. We pay to maintain it. We pay to clean it. It's our house. We tried to go there peacefully, and they ran away.
Yep. Yeah, they sure did. I mean, you know, and the thing with this is they blow it all out of proportion. Also, is that the FBI is on the trail of 100 more of these terrorists, these homegrown terrorists. You know, it's totally ridiculous. Totally ridiculous. It's just. It's nonsense. And you know what? I don't think many people were actually even arrested. I think it was all media hype and a bunch of mumbo-jumbo nonsense. Because if you look up anyway, the crimes that they did supposedly commit, the ones that were captured on video, that could be altered, by the way, and switched around, all right, to make
right.
it look like something that happened, because we know that they have that technology. The maximum penalty they could receive for the damage that they did supposedly do is 1 year in jail. You know, so it's all fabricated lies.
The thing is, you know, Trump's was right from the beginning. I'm not a supporter of either one of them, although he was more right than the rest or what they're doing now. And the fact of the matter is that they rioted three times a goddamn day for 100 days, and the Democrats encouraged it. They allowed the people to do it. They gave them food. They gave them money. They told the police to stand down, and they let them get away with it. The people go there for 2 hours, and they make a goddamn national news event out of it day after day after day because they're scared shitless.
Yeah, and they should be. They should be. I mean, look what they've done with this stimulus, so-called stimulus package. Okay, it's over and done with. They still got it screwed up. People on Social Security disability still haven't received no damn stimulus money. The people that really need it, the people on Social Security and disability, I mean, they still haven't received a penny from it. You know, meanwhile, I mean, what's going on? What's going on? Where's the money at? You know, you call the White House. Call the White House switchboard. They just hang up on you. They don't care. You know, and go to the IRS.gov. Website's locked out. You're locked out. You know, this information doesn't match up with our records. They lock you out. You know, it's all people. It's just one. The gridlock has come to a point of where people are sick and tired of it. And I'm sick and tired of the patriots out there and their nonsense too, with their fake websites, their BitChute and everything else. Oh, things are gonna change. Oh yeah, get out of their jurisdiction. You know, not, you know, nothing's good. Nothing is going to happen that from their end of the spectrum, let's put it that way. And the militia community, they're a hogwash too. You know, a bunch of nonsense.
No, it's not. Where did the money go? $1.9 trillion, if I recall correctly, would put $65,000 in all of our pockets. So where did the money go? Like Trump said, it went to the cities and towns and states that are democratically run that took a hit for doing everything they did, having the police stand down and everything. That's where it went. They were all bought off.
Yeah, yeah, the judges, yeah, oh yeah, they were all bought. That's right, the judges were paid off, and that's where the money goes. You're right, just like the banker bailed out years ago, same thing. You know, it's all nonsense. It's all nonsense. But I got other calls here. Anything else you want to add here?
I'll let you go, and I'll listen for the rest of the evening. I just wanted to say, excuse me, like I've always said, it's always nice to be entertained and watch the news, but don't believe it. Pay attention to what they're saying. Do your own research. Turn off the TV and have a good day. I'll listen for the rest of the evening.
All right. All right. Thank you there, Connecticut, state of Connecticut there. All right. Let's go to 781. 781, welcome to the podcast here.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Pretty good.
You're up there in Massachusetts, correct?
In your podcast, so.
Yeah. You're usually on the other network there, the NSM's network there, and we had a good podcast there last night. Let me tell you, they did a real good one. My buddy there, Sarge, called in, and boy, he could break it down. Let me tell you, I don't think anybody over there had anything. They all just had to agree with him, which he was correct. I mean. And we need more people of black, African, whatever they want. I don't know. I don't want to be politically incorrect. I just call them, you know, people of color or whatnot, to stand up and rise up like him. And because if we can get them on board also, and stop with the differential nonsense, and stop feeding into the propaganda to divide the people, and we start uniting let me tell you something, we can unite in this country to do the right thing and have a one common goal. There would be some systematic changes here that would really benefit all people from around the world. And I'm not saying a one world order. I would never want that. I want individual sovereign countries. Yeah. But I'm just saying that we can come together, you know. And I'm not saying you have to live with this one. I'm not telling you to mix with anybody. I'm not telling you to do anything. You have a right to choose whatever you want to choose. You have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And right now, we have an enemy. We have one enemy that is saying that we can't, and they're trying to take away that right. And because they're forcing us to live a certain way and choose a certain way, and that's not right either. But they're
jump in here and have one more comment.
What's that?
Listen for the evening.
What's that?
You know,
go ahead.
The Democrats, they're the ones that want to do away with the black people. That's why they get rid of 40% of them every year through Planned Parenthood. The black people, they want to do away with. They say not. But they do. And you know what? They're scared shitless of the black race, too. And that's the people that need to stand up against these politicians in D.C. because they're scared shitless, like I said, of the rest of us that are going to come down there. But get the black people pissed off at them and get them down there. You know why? Because they will burn the house down.
Well, I don't advocate that now. I don't want to advocate. I'm not saying the black community is going to burn down anything. You can't be careful what you say on that note. I mean, we're not saying the black community is going to go burn down anything, and we would never advocate that. So you got to be careful what you put the words there.
I,
no.
They would. And the Democratic Party that's in control now, they are scared to death of the black people. And I'm just trying to point out that the black people, if they got involved and did it the right way, then they would get their way.
Well, it's not black people. I don't want to say it in that type of derogatory term.
Well,
yeah,
listen,
I'm saying
listen,
that,
I can,
yeah,
I can say it whatever way I want, and that's what
I'm
trying to get my point across.
Different races of people. I know what you're saying. I'm just saying you got to be careful how you say things because they misconstrue it. Because remember, we have a corporate government here that takes your words and they analyze it and they twist it and they run it down your throat backwards and turn it into something that it's not. And then these people feed into it. What I mean by these people is I'm talking about the elite. The cabal, the banking
right, all right.
cartel,
so let me,
the Federal Reserve, you know?
I rescind everything that I previously just stated, and I say the black people should stand up and redress their government for grievances as outlined in the Constitution, and your Democratic Party will listen to you.
Well, they won't listen to them, but they'd be scared to death, like you said. I don't, you know. But the thing of it is that they're advocating the other communities. Hang on, caller from Massachusetts. I apologize for that. What I'm trying to say is that they're using the race card always, and people buy into it because they want to be compassionate, and then they want to play into other fear or fear that's hidden that's not there. You know, there is no fear. Nobody fears. When I walk down the street, if I see three black people coming towards me, I don't run away and cower in the corner, okay? I don't really care. You know, as a matter of fact, I don't even pay attention to it. And but the thing is that they make that notion on the media and through the music and through the commercials and through the fashion and whatnot to make people think that, woo, you know, you got the bad gang members over here in Chicago. But, you know, because, you know, we talk about that too, the Chicago stuff and everything. And really, you go to Chicago, it's a peaceful city. You know, I mean, are there bad neighborhoods? Of course, there's bad neighborhoods in every community. But, you know, if I went through to Chicago, nobody's going to attack me because I'm white. You know, I mean, if I'm out at 3 o'clock in the morning, I could be attacked anywhere, even in my own damn backyard, for God's sake, and I live out in the country. So, you know, and I might get
That's
attacked
true.
By
I'm
a
gonna,
black
I'm
bear.
Gonna, continue and be muted. Let Massachusetts go. Just one thing. St. Valentine's Day Massacre has been a national event for, what, 60, 70 years now. 7 people died in Chicago that day, and every year it's been remembered. 7 people die in Chicago every day now, and nobody cares. Go ahead, Mass.
Because we interrupted her. Go ahead, Massachusetts. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It's fine. No, like, I was going to say, like, I've never heard of the St. Valentine Massacre. Like, what is that, honestly?
Well, they don't teach you true history in high school. That's why. And for the callers out there, listen, you're in high school. Hang on. You're in high school, so therefore you don't have civics class anymore. So, so therefore you never heard of it. But call Connecticut, you want to tell the caller now what the St. Valentine's Massacre is? And the rest of the callers, I will get to you, I promise, okay? Go ahead, Connecticut.
Well, I don't know specifically, but it had to do with the mafia when 7 of them were gunned down in a restaurant in Chicago. 7 people got gunned down, and that was big news. And in today's day and age, you get 7 people that die on a Saturday, and nobody blinks an eye.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. All right, well, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre had to do with Al Capone, and what they did was it was a bloody murder, and they basically shot him point blank, and it was a killing spree done through, because back then they had prohibition, and the mafia took advantage of prohibition, especially Al Capone, and he ruled, I guess you could say, the underworld and the mafia during the 1930s, and they could never catch him on anything, and they eventually got, and the St. Valentine's Day Massacre also shed light upon his control over the city of Chicago and his mafia buddies there. And what had happened with Frank Nitti and all them, and they got him on tax evasion because you can never run away from that IRS. But that's, you know. But look up Al Capone, and you'll. I'm sure the Valentine's Day Massacre will come into the somewhere in the story on there. If you don't go to Wikipedia, because Wikipedia is the biggest lie out there. So, but go ahead, caller.
Okay, I have an article if you want. If you're any of you guys are interested in reading,
yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. You can read it real quick. Go ahead. I got a bunch of callers online, but go ahead. I'll give you the time.
All right. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Have you heard about the Pittsburgh man accused of stabbing his 12-year-old boy at McDonald's?
No, I haven't actually.
Okay. So it was this is article is on Fox News. So yeah. Pittsburgh man accused of stabbing a 12-year-old boy at McDonald's and using racial slurs and bit a witness. Edwards Charles Turner, age 51, also allegedly punched and kicked and kneed police. The unhinged man accused of tackling and stabbing a 12-year-old boy in the neck at a Pittsburgh McDonald's allegedly bit another person, used racial slurs, and assaulted police officers during and after the attack, according to a criminal complaint. Charles Edward Turner, age 51, called police and McDonald's staff white N-words and white devils as officers and witnesses tried to get him under control following the attack on the child, who was inside the store with his family getting food for his diabetic family member at the time, the document states. Officers arrived at approximately 2:20 p.m. Saturday, just minutes after the assault, to find Turner standing in front of the vestibule of the Liberty Avenue McDonald's. He allegedly fought with police within monuments after their arrival on scene. Turner punched one officer in the face, and punched another, and continued to fight as the witness stepped in to help the police and the complaint states. As the officer searched him for any weapons or contraband, he allegedly kneed one cop in the face and continued to kick him at them. We can already, based on what I've read, we can already assume his race. So,
based upon what you read, is that it's not a national story. Number one, it's an article that you must have picked up and by searching through the internet. You probably had to search for it hard, or it just popped up maybe by chance. But your point of it is where you're getting to is that this is a suspect of color. And he is attacking white people using racial slurs, but nowhere on Fox News or CNN or anywhere else is this talked about, like the Asian shooting or Asian killing that just happened, right? Is that what you're trying to correlate at?
Right. Good point, actually.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Now you're in a high school. Because before I get to my next caller here, I got a private caller on the line. Before I get to my next caller, you're in high school. Now, do they address any of these social issues in your high school? For instance, like do they talk about, like for instance, Jesse Smollett case, this Asian thing that just happened, Trayvon Martin or something like that? Throughout your years in school, have they addressed any of this to the students?
I'm not sure. I don't think.
So because you're in Massachusetts, so I'm just saying is that they don't say they don't offer, because on the news media they say they offer grief counselors for national tragedies that happen, like these school shootings and whatnot.
Right.
They've never done that?
I don't think they've ever done it. I mean, are they like?
Okay.
They offer like counselors and stuff. But I don't think that they've actually addressed
My question is do they address any type of racial teachings in your high school? Like, for instance, when there's a national tragedy, do they ever say, hey, you know, this is terrible, these white supremacists, you know, this guy was, like, said the South Carolina one, you know, like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, they have. Well, give me one instance real quick where they've addressed it. What did they do? Make an announcement? Did they, make an announcement to the teacher?
It's a lesson. I guess, and, we learn about it and such in, history class, I guess.
Okay. Well, what I'm trying to get at what I'm trying to ask you is this. When there's a national shooting, like a school shooting or like Parkland or something that just happened recently, you're in high school for the past 3 years.
Yeah.
Do they ever come out and talk about a specific shooting and try to address it or try to use some sort of narrative to push on you?
Mm-mm. don't think.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, think about that for a couple minutes. I'm going to move on to the next caller. Stay on the line. Like, throughout the last few years when you were in high school, if they ever addressed a specific case and how they talked about it, you know, or how they tried to push that propaganda on the students. Because I'm interested in knowing about that. I did a show years ago with high school students, and it was a very good show, actually, where, you know, they came on and they talked about the security in schools and how they were talking about the Confederate flag, how it's racist, and how they used this anti-white type of propaganda, you know. And then we talked about this a couple weeks ago, where the school boards actually are teaching now that people should not be proud of their white heritage. So I don't want to turn this into a racial show, but I'm just trying to get a high school student's perspective on what they're teaching in the schools up, you know, in the especially in the Northeast.
And they're trying to erase the past, so these new students don't even know about it.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get at. I want to know what the curriculum is, what they're teaching, you know, how they're – when I was in high school, they would teach – like, for instance, we watched a Charles Manson video in civics class. They don't do civics anymore, you know, but in 1987, they had Geraldo Rivera interviewing Charles Manson. And I remember us talking about the 1960s and whatnot, you know, the civil rights movement. They taught us about the civil rights movement, but they never taught us about, you know, anti-white stuff or anything like that. They just used, like, the psychopath Charles Manson, which he was a psychopath, you know, obviously. And, you know, and I remember – you know, him dancing and everything, you know, and we talked about that in civics class. I just remember that one lesson that we talked about. And, you know, and then they talked about George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, and U.S. And then we had a U.S. history class in my junior year. I remember that, U.S. history. So, you know, but just think about that real quick. And if you can think of any lessons that they've tried to cram down your throat. Let me go to a private caller here. Private caller, go ahead.
Joe. Just when I thought I was out, you pull me back in.
Hey, sorry,
how you doing,
how
man?
You doing? Doing all right. We're talking about you, exactly.
Man, I know. I thought so. That's why my ears were burning. But look, man, you know what you were saying about the another thing I think is important to commemorate or acknowledge or recognize about St. Valentine's Day Massacre, in addition to the sheer brutality and boldness of it all, is the fact that two of the four killers, I think it was Scalise and Ansami, used Thompson submachine guns along with two shotguns.
That's right.
In large measure as the impetus for the National Firearms Act of 1934, which even though it didn't ban automatic weapons in the possession of civilians, it was the first nationwide gun control scheme that required you to have a $200 transfer tax and a background approval check by the federal government before you were allowed to own one. So
okay.
I think that was the most significant political fallout from the St. Valentine's Day Massacre and similar shootouts with bandit gangs using automatic weapons, many of which were frequently stolen from National Guard armories.
Yeah, like John Dillinger. You know, John Dillinger, remember
exactly.
Him? I mean, they named a gun after him, you know, because he escaped from prison with that Dillinger, I guess, you know, so.
Well, you know, I mean, he liked the B.A., Clyde Barrow, Bonnie and Clyde, he liked the B.A.R., because it would readily punch through car doors, you know, heavy metal car doors, whereas Thompson's gun's pistol caliber bullet didn't do it. So he regularly raided National Guard armories to steal BARs.
Well, and these guys were criminals. We're not trying to highlight their criminal activity. I mean, these guys were bad people. I mean, they were robbing banks,
gunning down
police officers, for goodness sake. You know, I mean, I don't
But they use it as an excuse to go after every law-abiding citizen as well. Only law-abiding citizen show up to the federal government, pay a $200 transfer tax. Remember, back then, that was about the equivalent of about $3,100 in today's money. Only law-abiding citizens pay the equivalent of $3,100 and then go through a background check and in order to lawfully possess a firearm. Criminals will never do it. Never. And, in fact, I don't think there's been one automatic weapon or maybe only one or two in the history of the National Firearms Act that have ever been used in a crime, and one of them was owned by a former police officer.
Yeah, yeah, You're right. You're absolutely correct.
That's what we get, man. And now we got the senile old goat calling for more gun control in the wake of this thing in Boulder, Colorado. And have you seen, and you were just talking earlier about the Democrats are trying to instill divisiveness amongst racial groups in this country, and they just did it with this. Do you know what they've been doing? The bodies are hardly even cold yet. Have you seen what they're doing?
No. Well, no. Enlighten me, please.
Well, let me tell you. First of all, you know, our mattress-backed vice president, Kamala Harris, her, she has a niece. And her niece immediately posted a Twitter message showing how this shooting in Colorado proves that white males are the most dangerous threat that America faces. Now, this is before the news come out. This guy was a Syrian Muslim fanatic aligned with ISIS. And as soon as the news came out, she's frantically scrubbing her pages to get it off the web, even though anthropologically it's my understanding that Syrians are Caucasian anthropologically in the main, but that's neither here nor there because, as we all know, the white men they are most concerned about, the progressive Marxist, cultural Marxist left, the white males they are most concerned with are Christian, heterosexual white males who seek to uphold the best traditions of Western civilization. Those are the only white males they really go after. And all the other white males, if they kowtow to their agenda, they're perfectly fine with letting them be serfs in the New World Order.
Yeah. But you're right.
But I'm just saying, man, I mean, it was all over the place. They were tweeting immediately. They just reflexively went to this meme and this narrative of white male. And then as soon as they find out, I swear these people are utterly despicable. As soon as they find out he was a Muslim, probably fanatic, and was a grievance monger, seeing a Muslim hate crimes everywhere and threatening to file them against people who accused him, who offended his Muslim sensibilities, they immediately pivoted on a dime, and now they're saying gun control, and he was a victim of a hate crime who knew nothing else to do but to lash out against his victimization by the greater white male society. This is what's all over the web now. These people are the worst I've ever seen. They literally want to turn this country into a North American version of Yugoslavia.
What's the latest on H.R. 1, by the way, this House resolution with the voting thing? What's going on with that?
Well, I don't think there's been a vote on it in the House yet. I think they're still debating it. But I'm certain it's going to pass the House, and it's going to be headed to the Senate.
Oh, everything they run to push through there is going to go through. I mean, unless you get some sort of Democrat, you know.
I have little doubt of that. But it might have more trouble in the Senate, but we'll see. I just don't know anymore with all these Vichyite Republicans and these crazy Democrats. I mean, you got Joe Manchin in there.
Did you hear? I tried calling a congressman out there in California. You heard the voicemail message. None of them work from any of their offices no more. So you can't get a hold of them. And it said in the message, if you need to get a hold of us, we will return your call. And I gave him my show number, and I'm watching my board closely, and I don't see any calls. And I'm going on for 2 hours here, so I'd like to see if they got the balls to call back a live podcast show, which I have some serious questions concerning these House resolutions and whatnot these bills that they're getting ready to pass, or they're debating on the House floor. Do you think they'll call me back? No.
I doubt it, but I can bloody well guarantee you that this is like a Democrat wet dream wish list. I can guarantee you they're probably going to pass it.
Now the National Guard.
Pass up this big a chance for a power grab? Oh, no, they're not going to do that.
I know. Now the National Guard, I would never do that to you, but if you had to ask them some questions about, for instance, the D.C. Surrounding of the Capitol One, or what are they doing, why aren't they not guarding the border, or what authority, you were a military guy. Now
I was in the National Guard after I got off active duty, I was in the National Guard for 22 years.
Okay. So what is their – now, if they are given an unlawful order or if they're not doing the job that they're supposed to be doing as the National Guardsmen supposed to do, the National Guard, self-explanatory, National Guard, where can a National Guardsman or a ranking officer or the upper echelon of the Guard, what can they do to ensure the people or take action themselves? Do they have to obey orders just from the United States corporate government, or can they?
Every member of the armed forces subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice is obligated to obey lawful orders. Now, it is entirely conceivable that they can be given lawful orders on the border, which will enhance and encourage illegal immigration. They can still be technically lawful. On the other hand, they can be given orders, yes, entirely so. Because, remember, immigration policy is at the behest of the federal government. If Congress votes to open up the borders tomorrow, then it's done legally. There's nothing in the Constitution that says anything about immigration quotas or anything else. Now, here's the problem.
Really?
We know what this unchecked, rampant, illegal immigration is going to do to our country. It's going to be one more nail in the coffin that will eventually destroy it as a republic. We know this.
Wow.
So it is simply irresponsible of them to do what they're doing on the border. So a soldier given an order is going to have to evaluate in light of what he knows to be legal and illegal, and he's got to be prepared to face the consequences for disobedience of a lawful order if, in fact, it's a rotten, no-good, stinking, lousy order, but it's legal.
Well, this is what it says right here, lawful order. The constitutional necessity, obedience to orders in U.S. military practice is rooted in democratic and constitutional principle. Military obedience to the President's and Secretary of Defense orders underpins civilian constitutional control of the military. What does that mean?
Well, what it means is that the idea of lawful orders means that it is presumed by that principle that orders given by civilian authority over them, because I thought we have civilian control of the military. I mean, the President of the United States cannot be a member of the armed forces.
Mm-hmm.
Can't be. Owing to the inherent nature of the job. So it's like separation of power. He can't be. He's got to be a civilian. So if he was like a general officer or whatever, he had to resign his commission, like Eisenhower and the others did, right? But it's presumed that the orders that the president gives are inherently lawful and constitutional. That's the presumption. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, that a president can't give, because obviously they can and obviously they have. But that's the principle. The orders you're going to get from your civilian authority are going to be lawful and constitutional, and on their face you're supposed to obey them. Now, that does not mean... In fact, you're not supposed to. You're not supposed to obey unlawful orders. So it's like kind of a contradiction there in a lot of ways. So that's why it's up to the soldier to be absolutely certain that the order he is disobeying is, in fact, an unlawful and unconstitutional one. Because the consequences for not obeying a lawful order, as you well know, can be very severe.
Okay, well, let me put this to you. You heard of this, then. You're obviously a very knowledgeable, very intelligent individual. Yeah, the good government papers, okay? Organized by Just Security. For instance, they put this together. Legislative and administrative proposals to promote nonpartisan principles of good government, public integrity, and the rule of law. All right? And if you go down to this where it says like this. Let's read this. I do solemnly swear and affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, and that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will well and faithfully discharge the duties of the office on which I am about to enter. So help me God. You know, now, they talk, now if we go back to the Watergate...
Now, you do know that is the oath for a commissioned officer. That's not the oath that enlisted personnel take.
Oh, okay, all right.
The oath for a commissioned officer, and there's a reason for the distinction.
Okay. Tell me the reason.
Well, the reason is you notice the main difference is that enlisted personnel are told they will obey the officers of those appointed over them. You notice that?
Mm-hmm, okay.
Whereas the officers I will take under without purposes of evasion or mental reservation, to undertake the duties of this office and to obey, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. See, that's why they wanted to leave it, make it clear to officers that they were expected to exercise discretion where they might be given an order that might be unconstitutional and or tyrannical. That's why there's a distinction. And you notice, read the two different enlistments, oaths and enlistments. They are distinct for that reason, because of greater responsibilities that are thrust on officers. And that's every officer from second lieutenant up to four-star general and beyond. If they're in uniform and they're subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, every officer takes the same oath once they're commissioned.
Okay, well, let's look at this one then. More recently, the clearing of protesters in Lafayette Square, the advent of protest movements across the country following the death of George Floyd, and statements by President Trump about the electoral process have promoted questions about when and when in contest the president may lawfully order U.S. Armed Forces, regular reserve, or National Guard into domestic and civil contexts. You know, and these questions arise here in this essay here that I'm reading. It's very interesting. And it says, however, the question of lawful orders may be cast and debated with a particular president in mind or through a partisan lens. Questions about lawful orders are recurring and arise in daily national security contexts across administrations as well as everyday military life. Okay, so we must be talking about the enlistment here, enlistment officer also. The National Security Council staff, for example, is prone to convey guidance to the Department of Defense and the military. If such guidance, in fact, comes from the president and directs the performance of a military duty, then it is a military order. However, if it comes from the staff, including the National Security Advisor, it is not an order but is merely suggestive. As a result, for some years, it has been normative for specific memos called cabinet memos to be written to memorialize specific directions or orders from the president to the Department of Defense and military chain of command. Similar questions can arise within the Defense Department as matters are debated and decisions made. And neither is the question of lawful orders a new one. It is enduring for members of the armed forces. Military officers and civilian officials swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution. They do not swear an oath to the head of state or to service or branch, as is in the case of some other countries' armed forces. Thus, a following orders is an essential professional military duty inherent to the law, and thus lawful military orders is an essential American military duty, as it is essential. Military committed to the rule of law, members of the U.S. Armed Forces, as General Hyten suggested here in this essay, have a duty not only to follow orders but to refuse to comply with illegal orders. That is the military's constitutional compact. In exchange for its obedience to orders, the military chain of command, including its civilian components, commits to abide by meaningful process to ensure that orders are lawful. So therefore, not guarding our border and guarding the Washington, D.C., surrounding the Capitol to keep people out and locking down the city of Washington, D.C., you know, the military is in what I'm trying to get at my point here, Sarge, is this. The military is really our structure. Without the military, we have no country, really. We can't protect our sovereignty. And what they're doing is they're pinning the military against the people, and then people are starting to wake up every single day, like because you're already awake, Sarge, obviously, but other people are starting to wake up saying, hey, where's the military in all this? Why isn't the military, if this election was fraud, if they're not protecting the borders, they're letting people come across the borders, why is the military not stepping in and saying, hey, you know, stepping to the president and saying, hey, you need to knock this off because, you know, you know what I mean? I'm trying to get at dissent is starting to happen, and this country is divided. So therefore, the question arises is the people's will to do the right thing and the military, of course, will to do the right thing. What this is a question that's being posed every single day through the political philosophical views of the media, the people on the streets, people like you and I, podcasters in the alternative media, where we're coming right now where we have to restore our republic and start getting back to a constitutional republic and do the right thing. And that means
of a soldier who reconciled the very dilemma that you are speaking of right now, that I'm sure you've heard the name. He did exactly a reconciliation to his moral what he felt was his moral and patriotic duty to his country. His name was Billy Mitchell. He saw the threat being directed against the United States. He saw the problems with the country's lack of preparedness to deal with an attack that was, what in his mind, was imminent, and he disobeyed lawful orders not to speak about it and spoke about it. He was subsequently court-martialed and cashiered out of the service. See, that's an example of a man who decided to disobey a lawful order, if you want to, for the higher good. Because he did disobey a lawful order. You don't have First Amendment rights when you're in uniform. You don't. Your rights are circumscribed by, at that time, the Articles of War. Today, the Uniform Code of Military Justice. You don't have even Second Amendment rights in the armed forces because they tell you when you carry the gun around and when you will have it and when you will turn it back in. So, I mean, there are all kind of rights that are circumscribed, First Amendment rights, Second Amendment rights, Fifth Amendment rights, Eighth Amendment rights, Fourth Amendment rights. They're all, to a large degree, circumscribed. You're not under the protection of the Constitution. You're under the protection of the Articles of War, formerly, now the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So it's up to each individual soldier to decide what he's going to. I'm telling you right now, if I was still in the armed forces, I think I'd be getting court-martialed. I'm serious.
Yeah, you said that last night. Yeah,
I would be getting court. I just say, I'm not putting up with this. I'm not going to fall for this agitprop. And I just say, yes, I know I'm disobeying a lawful order, and I'm prepared to accept the consequences for it.
Wow.
But that's what you, what you better do.
So if we have dissension from the military, what in your opinion, again, we talk about solutions, what do you think needs to be done so we don't utter into chaos and self-destruct as America and end up in riots everywhere and we lose law and order? Because you and I don't want to see that. But at the same time, is revolution inevitable? Is what's happening here, you know? Not to put you on the spot.
What was it that the liberals love to quote Martin Luther King, don't they? It's like, and quite rightly so, because the man said some very wise things. But here's the one that they love more than anything else, is that given the level of disorder and riot BLM put upon us during the summer, riots are the cries of the unheard. Now, if you keep silencing people and do not allow them to speak their dissent, there's a great deal of truth to what Martin Luther King said. And if they keep this up, this silencing and canceling, The cries of the unheard are going to be expressed in turmoil, riot, and yes, perhaps even revolution. You better believe it.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Now, through your friends, you served in Vietnam. You were in the Gulf, Desert Storm. You're in the National Guard for 22 years, you just said. Your friends and whatnot from compare your friends from the generation of the 90s to the Vietnam era. What is there a difference of opinion between the groups, or are we all on board here on the same page saying, hey, we're broken here and something needs to be done?
I'll tell you, I got out of the National Guard after Operation Iraqi Freedom. You know, it was like 2004. That's when I retired from the Guard. And, you know, I had about 26 years, 27 years total active service, active and National Guard. And most of the people in the armed forces back then were conventionally patriotic. There weren't too many woke people in the armed forces, honestly. There were some. I would say they might be what you call conventionally or left of center liberal. But for the most part, they were conventionally patriotic. At wokeness was almost unheard of. When a wokeness, not what we're seeing now. There's been a metastasizing in that respect in the armed forces, and it's due to the fact that these people in the armed forces now were raised by academics and educational institutions that have seized the educational establishments throughout the United States. They are a reflection to a great extent of that reality. So, I mean, we have to expect that the armed forces of today isn't even the armed forces of the Vietnam era. Most of the reason the guys I knew in Vietnam were pissed about being in Vietnam because they weren't letting us fight to win it. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they weren't pissed necessarily so much about the war itself. They said, if we're going to be over here, will you please let us fight it and defeat these North Vietnamese and stop letting them have sanctuaries in Laos and Cambodia and all this stuff?
Yeah, but Sarge, you hear the anger of the callers here. I have a high school students calling in here earlier. I have another gentleman from Connecticut calling in. The anger of society right now. I'm trying to get people from the Republic in here to listen to this. Now, where they can explain their position as though and they started this process back the plan where they got the military involved. I was a part of that also to restore our constitution because they foresaw this happening down the road, especially when Obama came into office, and the thing with it is that people are angry and they're distraught, and there seems to be no answers in sight. And we just answered several questions here right now where I'm getting pounded with emails about what role can the military actually play, because everyone says, well, the military's in control. I don't think the military is really in control anymore. I believe they're out there on a loft, on a lily pad someplace, wondering when the people are going to start getting it together and bringing us together.
Oddly enough, Joe, look, you've got to understand, we are the ones that are supposed to protect the armed forces from what they're going through now. The civilian population is supposed to protect them right now from this purge they're doing to them. Why? Because they're not supposed to speak up about it politically. That's what we're supposed to do. Civilians. We're supposed to see what these hideous creatures in the federal government are doing to the armed. They're purging it. They're setting it
yeah.
up for a purge.
Yeah.
We're not supposed
and
to let our politicians do that to them.
And sorry,
and
I got, I've got,
us,
got
most of us are just
yeah.
shrugging our shoulders and looking the other way. After all, it's not a conscript army or armed forces anymore. I mean, it's all by you volunteered for it, didn't you?
Yeah,
not
yeah.
realizing that it is the most single important institution in the United States because it literally protects this nation's ability to live and survive. There is no other institution in the federal government, certainly, more important than the armed forces of the United States. And they're messing it. They're about to wreck it. We're supposed
well,
to be protecting
they're in the
it
process.
Right now, this political stuff. We are, and we are failing in our duty to them.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
This may mean if we're just going to abrogate our duty to the armed forces to protect them when they're under this sort of assault from their own leadership, then the military is going to have to decide at what point it's going to break its constitutional oath and become political. And that isn't good either. This is what you call
now,
you
being in the military
dilemma.
Now you're speaking as a civilian, but I'm just saying, as you in the military, when you were in the military, 22 years, National Guard, the National Guard, where does that start at? Does it start with the National Guard? And I've got some people on from the Republic now that are just queuing in now. I'm going to bring them on. The governor of the Free State of Colorado.
As a National Guardsman, you're a part-time soldier. The only time you got to worry about things like this is when you're subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, which is like at summer camp or when you're federalized and called into active service. Then you do. But you theoretically, depending upon what you do, especially if you're an officer, which is why, you know, what's her name, that senator who ran, what was that woman's name, who ran for president?
Gabbard, Tulsi Gabbard.
Yeah, Tulsi Gabbard. She was still a commissioned officer in the National Guard. She had to be very careful about what she said about Donald Trump. But she did.
Yeah.
I mean, it was okay to express, you know, dissent with policy and all that, even as an officer. But she had to be very careful not to say anything disrespectful about the commander-in-chief, because he was a commander-in-chief.
Yeah.
But you got to remember,
yeah.
though, anytime you are subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, okay? As a guardsman, you're not necessarily so, because most of the time you're on state duty. But you get called up for summer camp, when you get called in the federal service, you're in the Army or the Air Force if you're in the Air National Guard. You're in it. It's just the same. Your status legally is just the same.
All right,
so
Sarge,
now,
I've got
that. That's when that question, it's different with reservists. They got a slightly different status because reservists are not subject to state duty and all that stuff. I'm not exactly sure how this would reserve. I knew I was a guard, though.
All right.
Guard is not always in a federal status of call-up. If they're not in a federal status of call-up, for the most part, they're under state service and under control of their commander-in-chief, the respective governors of the states.
Well, that's what I'm getting to right now. I'm going to bring on Mr. Carpenter from Colorado
One more thing clear this up. Remember, the National Guard is part of the organized militia of the several states. The organized militia is the biggest component of the organized militia, meaning people that are set up in a specific units and financed by state and or federal authorities for state service. So the National Guard literally is answerable to the governor. Now, if a governor of a state, remember, you ever heard that little thing that happened from 1860 to 1865, you know, called the war between the states?
Yes.
Well, what do you think the governors of the Confederacy did with their militias? They called them into their state service. And that's
okay.
one of the reasons why Confederates could not be considered traitors or anything like that. They were called into service by their governors. And they were
fighting. Okay, but hang on. All right,
Sarge,
hang on one second.
Governors.
Sorry. Yeah, but Sarge, hang on. The papers that, hang on, I'm going to bring on the governor now right here. All right, these papers, you know, the papers that I just read, the obedience to orders as a military necessity, the military duty not to follow clearly unlawful orders, the current system in place to meet the requirements of obedience to lawful orders, some of the questions civilian and military leaders should purposefully address to minimize ambiguity and disputes over whether orders are lawful. However, to be clear, it's not intended to address a specific order, past, present, or future, or for that matter, a particular scenario, which that's what we're playing out here is a scenario, but in fact, is it or isn't it? It is an exposition on the nature of military orders so that in the context, lawyers, commanders, and observers have an analytic framework with which to draw and apply. Now, I'm going to bring on James Carpenter. He's with the Republic. The Republic, the de jure, not the de facto government here, and he's active. So I'm going to bring him on. Mr. Carpenter, go ahead. Welcome to the podcast here. I've got some military men on here and civilians and some high school students and some pastors, actually, that want to get here, but I'm going to keep them off on the side here for now. But go ahead, Mr. Carpenter. Welcome to the show.
Well, good evening, Joe, and everyone that's joined us here. Interesting conversation. Yes, that is the topic. We know we live in a world that's broken. We know who the big dog on the block is, and we think it's our military, but it's not our military. It's the people that control our military, and that's when the rabbit hole gets really interesting. But from my perspective, I believe that we are witnessing the playing out of the final days of the ultimate sting worldwide. And that there is a lot of hope, but without a form of government, then there is tyranny or chaos, and that's the last thing that any of us want, and we're all sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And so from my perspective and where we're sitting today, the military and the American people are in a quandary as to they don't want to serve in the corrupt jurisdiction, but they don't have an alternative without crossing the line of military code, of defending the Constitution. And yet there is constitutional and lawful ways that have been implemented, and Joe and I have worked on these with other people for over a decade. And we have done it right. We have done it according to – the rule of law, and we are in control, the American people, through our efforts of the assets of the defunct corporation that is the big military dog on the block.
Now, how could you say you're in control when they're allowing the border to be open right now? The border is a total. Right now, we have. There's no control over the border. The military surrounding Washington D.C. and these Democrats right now in the de facto corporation are creating. They're going to take away basically the Electoral College. There's going to be. They're going to nationalize the elections. I mean, how can we say we're in control or the Constitutional Republic is in control anymore? Because we're losing it.
There's the quandrum, Joe. And the reason that they're not in control is because although we've been presenting in law the option of re-inhabiting our republic for a decade, right, people have failed to get involved in that optional jurisdiction. And that's why Trump was set in, was to bring the masses with him and to perform the ultimate sting to bring these people down. And this is part of the mind games in mitigating the damages, because once the truth about the human trafficking and child sex ring and pedophilia and all this stuff comes to light, even the majority of your most diehard party-affiliated Democrats are going to be repulsed at what they're doing to humanity. And at that point in time, then the switch will happen, and the military will follow the people because that's their oath, is to be one of the representatives of the people on the battle lines. And so this is the what's coming in the future. And the corporation's on its deathbed. They can't back their silver, their paper silver. And the mint today put out a notice that they're not honoring any more sales. They don't have any more silver to produce. And they're refunding money on orders that have been in waiting with no back order. They're coming out with digital currency made up with computer digits, just like the good faith and promises of the Federal Reserve System that base their wealth on nothing except good faith and promises.
During Trump's presidency, the Federal Reserve was basically almost eliminated because the Treasury Department took over monetary policy. But now I just heard it today, even through the Glenn Beck show, that the Fed is involved with monetary policy again. They're starting to create and they're doing exactly what you just said. But the Fed is back in control, printing presses, and that's why they haven't sent out these stimulus payments to the people on Social Security, disability, and whatnot. They say, well, some people have already gotten their checks. They keep saying that, right? Because there's no more money to print. The Fed can't do it. So therefore, the insolvency is already happening, and people are not seeing it.
Amen.
So therefore, these politicians continue to throw up this smoke screen in Washington, D.C., and right now the American people are oblivious to this, but the military is sitting there doing nothing, and our borders are open. So what does we the people do? What do we do?
Well, it's all – you're awoke. You're woke up, Joe, but a lot of people haven't, or a lot of people are in the process. And to mitigate the damages, the overwhelming majority of the people need to be woke up. And we're in the last 10-15% of looking for those people. And when they can't wake up, then you take away their food, their water, and their money. And now they're going to wake up. And we're in that process. And so they're going to teach you to eat grass if you don't wake up soon enough.
I got that. But the thing of it is right now, Prince Sarge, you're still there with me,
get...
I hope.
One thing we got to realize, man, and this is what the most frightening aspect of it is, like I just told you moments ago, we are supposed to be protecting our armed forces right now because they can't speak up politically. They're not supposed to. We're supposed
That's
to
right.
do that. We're supposed to be
Amen.
Protecting them right now. They protect us when it's the time to confront an enemy, either foreign or domestic, on the battlefield or across the battle line. But before that, politically, we're supposed to be protecting from this, and we're not doing it. And even worse, I don't know, or as bad as that, is the fact that the leadership, remember I talked about this the other night? I'd
yep.
say from 06 up, that's like colonel or captain in the Navy or colonel in the Army and the Marines and the Air Force, I mean full bird colonel, from 06 up, the leadership of the armed forces is hopelessly woke, leftist, compromised. They're not speaking out against this to any great degree. They are accepting it. They are rolling over. They are showing their bellies. And that's from the Secretary of Defense all the way down to Brigadier General. Because they know what side their careers are buttered on. So they're not fighting against it. Remember what happened with Douglas MacArthur and Harry Truman? But see, here's the thing about that. That was the case where MacArthur differentiated with the president over policy. There was nothing illegal about any order that Truman gave to MacArthur. MacArthur simply disagreed with his policy, and he didn't think it was good. He wanted to win through to total victory. Truman decided he was going to limit the war. Now, you can argue as to which side was more correct. But the president was the commander-in-chief. And MacArthur literally disobeyed orders in order to send a letter to Congressman Joseph Martin, which he read on the floor of the House of Representatives. And that led to his being sacked by Truman. So, see, in that case, that was simply a general disagreeing with the commander-in-chief over policy. What we're looking at right now, though, is a usurpation of the basic functions of the federal government to protect and maintain this border against invasion. They're not doing it. And technically,
well,
where's the church?
Where's the church yet, Sarge? Where's the church? Remember, we talked about what I just said a moment ago, Joe.
The church is one of those entities that should be protecting the armed forces right now so they don't have to get political.
That's right.
We're supposed to be the armed forces guardian right now.
But the New World Order plan, this is getting to the head of the problem right now. The New World Order plan has worked methodically and very well. The churches are all 501c3. They've been incorporated to the United States government and their municipalities across the nation right now. The pastors of this country, the churches, are not going to speak up. They're not the backbone no more. There's no more righteousness. There's no more foundation to stand on. Our cities and our towns are broken. The family unit's broken. Our police forces are denigrated. They're being defunded as we speak. You know, you're a former officer too, Sarge. And the Republic is, I mean, I'm going to have to go after the Republic here. The Republic is trying to recruit
sure.
these citizens. You know, where are we? Where is everybody standing here in this? I think it's pretty much done.
Don't you get it, Joe? You are speaking to the width and breadth of the corruption that is set into this nation in every single major institution of this country. These radicals, these Bolsheviks, these progressives have done the long march. Maybe you've heard of the long march, Mao, the long march through the institutions the Chinese used to talk about. They're
yep.
accomplishing that long march through every important institution that we count on to maintain our constitutional republic. Now, they've not completed the task, but they're well on the way toward doing it. You're revealing
yeah.
it, Joe. You're just saying it. That in the church,
yeah.
the media, the academia, they've got their hooks in all of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And meanwhile,
well,
we're fighting over
we're
each other
about
race.
The show. It's the only
yeah.
thing they're good at doing. They're ruinous in everything else. Their policies are ruinous, destructive, corrosive, degenerate, depraved. They just mess up everything. They create misery wherever they go. Their allegiance is to a philosophy that literally killed 135 million people in the 20th century alone in 80 damn years. 80 damn
yeah.
years.
Yeah.
But yet and still, here we are. They can't do anything else right except seize power.
So what are you getting from the people that you know on the ground, Sarge, as the feeling and the concept of your community and the people and your contacts within the military and whatnot as to where we're heading right now? Are we really – because you said it already. I'm going to put you on the spot again. As to where we're heading, is our constitutional republic gone and lost? Is it only going to end up in the streets in guerrilla warfare and we're just going to watch America be divided up into chunks and pieces with the China hats coming in here and whatnot in the deep state going to destroy the American sovereignty? Have we lost our sovereignty? I mean, is there any republic left?
Every single one of my former colleagues, to a greater or lesser degree, and I mean everyone, and right now I'm regularly in touch with about 25 to 30 of them through message boards and all the rest. They all, to greater or lesser degrees, agree with me. Not one of them does not. And when we talk about it, we put it together. When I talked to you about it the other night, what are the options in the face of this impending crisis? What are the options? The options are, again, one, to accept the inevitable, yield to it, and be prepared to become serfs in their new form of fascistic, Soviet-style governance headed by oligarchs, high-tech oligarchs like Jeff Bezos and Ducey and all the rest of them.
Yeah.
Zuckerberg, yeah. The whole bunch of them. You know, all of those guys, all the high-tech overlords, and then they have a great big serf class, no more middle class, just a bunch of peasants, like imported from Mexico, and the rest of us are used to be in the middle income area, now part of the great serfdom class. Or we hope for a political solution from the admittedly feckless Republican Party, one that is frequently Vichyite and corrupted. Hope we can get a solution from them, because right now there will not, I don't think there'll be another force that could be mustered up within 2 years to oppose this politically, not to get enough steam to stop it. This thing is a steamroller. Or number three, we do, as Malcolm X put it, and this is one of the things I really agree with him about, we stop it by any means necessary. For me, those are the only three options I see. Now, I would suggest to anyone out there listening, you take your pick. I know which pick I'm going to do.
Governor from Colorado, the governor of the free state. Now, Sarge, so you know who this individual is. This is Jim Carpenter. He's the governor of the free state of Colorado. This is the republic. This is the republic. I'm not going to go into the whole history of the republic, but the republic is the du jour form of the Constitution, the original Constitution, as to that it was re-inhabited from the de facto back in 2008, 2009, 2010, and they served all the governors. They put together de jure grand juries in all 50 states, Sarge, all 50 states, and served each governor. Now, you heard very little of it on the corporate news media, but they came together and had the was basically going to usurp the corporation. The corporation, the military was going to get involved at this time and step in the middle because when Obama was elected, and it's a long history. You got to go. I mean, it's probably something you may have heard of. I think you did. You and I had this. Yeah. And
yeah, I have.
It got. Yeah. All right. So it got quashed, and because the people were not ready for it at that time. And you had the Tea Party Nation, too, getting involved. And everybody did what we're doing right now, except we had more leverage back then. I see less now. Governor from Colorado, what's the option?
May I ask the governor a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Joe?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, governor, it's my belief right now that particularly for a long time before this, I'm going to say it's been in effect. But I think maybe the nail in the coffin that led me to believe that we are living in a post-constitutional United States was when they let a non-natural-born citizen, and knew he was a non-natural-born citizen, it was like an open secret, assumed the office of presidency of the United States, and now they've just done the same thing again with the vice president, the exact same thing. One born a citizen of other countries. In the case of Obama, he was a citizen of Kenya and a citizen of Great Britain when he was born. And not only that, one of his parents, in Obama's case, was not a natural born, or not even a citizen. You don't have to be a natural born, not even a citizen. And then in the case of Kamala Harris, she is literally a 14th Amendment citizen, neither of whom's parents were a citizen when she was born. And she was born a citizen of India, Jamaica, and the United States via the 14th Amendment. This is why I think, and I'm wondering if you agree with me, my question to you is, are we in fact living in a post-constitutional United States?
Oh, by all means, sir, we have been since 1871 in law. In public law and rural standing. And that's when also they passed the Dictionary Act shortly thereafter and made citizen in their dictionary chattel to the corporation, the debts of the corporation. And so, yeah, we lost our country way back then. That's when we went away from common law and common sense to codes and statutes under admiralty law. And it's been the corporation had to run its course, and the American people had to wake up like you well have described, and it had to be able to prick the moral judgment of those that were still able to think and reason and begin the journey of what's wrong with this picture. And not only is what's wrong with this picture, but it's one thing to want to change, but if you're going to change, you got to have a target. You know, what are you going to aim at instead of? And nobody gets out of bed in the morning without a reason. I don't care what it is. And I thought it was old hat, you know, when I was younger, and I'm pushing 70. Here, the Bible answers everything. Well, you know, I've heard that all my life. Well, now we're in a situation where it also says when you see these things happening, you need to wake up. And it also says that when all this is exposed, you need to come out of her. And so I think that's where we need to start is, well, if we're going to come out of this corrupt system that you talk about and we want a moral and just society, it has to be by moral and just people. And I'm not displaying, it could well be that we may find ourselves in a situation.
Does the Republic
to,
still? Hang on, Governor. Let me interrupt because I just got 13 emails here. The chat room is closed. I can't get anybody else in the chat room. They're trying to get in the chat room. I got about 13 emails here. Does the Republic still have international standing with The Hague?
Sure. Yeah. You bet. And we got the right to the first in line on claims and assets of the corporation. And so this is what we're watching is the taking down of the corporation and the Federal Reserve System and the central banks. It always revolves around money. That's rule number one, and you need to follow the money. And so everything that we're living through was brought on by the deep state to take us into the New World Order, and the Patriots have thrown the bullshit flag, and now they're looking for, they're all sold on we got a problem. What they're looking for is now what are we going to do about it? How are we going to react? And if we react in a given way, then are we going to be part of the solution or part of the problem? And so this is where the communication breaks down, because natural reaction of humans is when you're in bondage, you want to be free, and you'll think about the consequences later. But I think a wise man thinks about how he's going to get there with the least amount of turmoil and the most success. And in that, we have a blessing of having a Constitution and a Bill of Rights. And as long as we stay within those confines, then, yeah, there'll be struggles, and there's going to be some weeding out, because the future is not for everybody. There is going to be those that are not going to like the future. But I do believe
I'm sure you would agree that the basis of American liberty is moral and religious. It's like John Adams said, our Constitution is made for a moral and religious people. It is wholly inadequate to the governance of any other. Now, we've got a ruling party right now, the Democratic Party, that at its convention, its presidential candidate convention, rejected the notion of God has and the creator God and natural law as part of the expression of the American Constitution, the American Republic, and the American ideal. And there can be no liberty in the American understanding without an understanding of the transcendent nature of the creator God. Now, I don't know what we're going to do when the governing party right now rejects the notion upon which American liberty is based.
I agree with you, but I also think that I'm going to give you an example of how this works. I have a border collie. I've got several acres. I've got a electric fence that's run remotely in an 80-foot diameter and a receiver collar on him. And over 4 or 5 years, he's learned where his boundaries are. And I can let him out without that collar on, and he still knows where his boundaries are because he's under the perception that he's not allowed to go any further than his boundaries, even though he won't be attacked by this shocking gizmo on his neck. And so Biden doesn't fly on Air Force One. He flies private. Air Force One is NA and has been since Trump left Washington, D.C. There's a lot of evidences that these people are playing a stage show, and we're buying into it like my dog buys into his boundary without the collar. And so we're voluntarily coming underneath their jurisdiction, their playhouse of cards that has no standing. And the sooner the American people figure this out and just say no, we have a vehicle and a standing government in law that owns assets, all you crooks, including all those other nefarious people that you mentioned, under executive order. We own them. They interfered in our election. And all of this is coming back to the American people that go back and re-inhabit and stand for the rule of law under our original Constitution. And that's what we all want. And the apparatus, the heavy lifting, the world recognition, all the documents, everything is there. What's missing is the people haven't gained the perception that they can fall under that rule of law and everything will fall into place with probably the least amount of bloodshed and carnage. Or we can go into tyranny and rebellion and figure out how we're going to work our way out of this without the protection of the rules of Almighty God and the laws of nature, nature's God, as you quoted, and we can try to rebuild this thing from scratch without having the protection of the Bill of Rights.
Well,
so logic in my world has to dictate that we need to follow the path that is provided for us. And isn't it interesting that God called his people, when they see these things happening, to come out of her? That means he has another place for us to be if we choose.
But
that's
we're not going to choose that.
To the question.
Well, yeah, that's a good answer, Governor. But then we're not going to choose that. But real quick, the military is the strongest point. We all agree upon that. And everyone's looking to the military. All the pastors, all the churches. We had a show with the theology professors on this show across the country, across the board, and they all agreed that the military has to stand up and do something and interject here. Now, real quick, the obedience to orders is the vital principle of military life, the fundamental rule in peace and in war for all inferiors through all the grades, from the general of the army to the newest recruit. Okay? The most influential scholar in the history of military law and the author of the 1920s, Tracy's Military Law and Precedents, this is not just the view of lawyers like Winthrop. It is the view of commanders like George Washington and James Mattis. who know best the wartime connection between obedience, discipline, law, and command. Discipline is the soul of an army. Washington wrote upon taking command of the Continental Army in 1775, it makes small numbers of formidable procures success to the weak and to esteem to all. Secretary Mattis agreed, quoting Washington in his August 2018 memorandum on discipline. Now, with the military not doing nothing and our borders wide open and the country's bankrupt and they're putting on a fake show, like you said, the stage, our pastors are all 501c3 churches. They're sold out. They're gone. There's no morality anymore. All right. We have people like Sarge out there, military and whatnot, that are standing there saying we need the people to interject and get involved. But how can we get involved when they're changing the election laws as we speak? Okay, there's not going to be one Republican elected anymore in the future after this goes through. And you're saying come over to the Republic. The Republic, how do the people go over to the Republic? Go to a website and do a lot of research and wake up. Waking up, that's over with. We're done waking up. It's time now either to say, hey, this is where we're at. And I think the Sarge, what he laid out, talking to his military friends and his connections and whatnot, laid out what's the inevitable, what's going to happen. Well, we see what these people, Governor, are not going to wake up and change their mind. These Democrats are not going to change their mind. And the conservatives are a sellout. The Republicans, we saw that with Pence on January 6th. So we're pretty much just serfs, like Sarge said, heading into a new world order, and that is really what God said is going to happen anyway, because unless there's an awakening or a spiritual awakening and we come out of her, like you said, nothing is going to change. And I don't see anyone coming out of her. I don't see anyone waking up, because we got pastors driving around the country right now in three-piece suits. They're more worried about their church and their numbers and the dollar bill than they are about saving souls. We have the military just standing there doing nothing, okay, because they can't do anything because the people are so weak and they won't wake up and they're too worried about their football game on Sunday than they are about their country. And we've got the socialists out there like AOC and that other one there, Omar, up there in Minnesota, talking about burn the United States, take it to the ground, we're going to change, we're going to give everybody free money because they have no clue how monetary policy works. And they don't understand the central bankers are ruling the world right now and the money changers. And we are finished. So unless we have some last hope-ditch effort that's going to inspire the people to wake up and come together and have one common goal, we're done. That's my opinion and my analysis of everything. Sarge, I'm going to turn it over to you. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to tell you something, man. Everything you're laying out, see, that's why this has got to be spoken out. And like I said, I was taught in the Armed Forces, one of the most valuable things I learned in the Armed Forces, especially as a senior non-commissioned officer and a leader, particularly as an operations sergeant in a military police battalion, what I was really taught was how to plan and how to organize for contingencies, you know, hope for the best, but plan for the worst. And right now we have to plan. We have to look at the options. We have to look at what is coming. We have to look at the operation. It's like the five-paragraph mission order. Situation, mission, concept of the operation, command and control, and logistics. Those are the five things we got to figure on. And right now, for a lot of the people, it is simply defining what the mission is and what the situation is. What is the nature of the enemy that we are arrayed against? And then what will the mission be? Now, we're going to ask the armed forces to intervene politically. We are going to ask something of them that has heretofore not been done in the history of the United States. All action that the military has ever undertook, certainly on any sort of a large scale, was always at the behest of civilian leadership, not self-directed. It was like you talk about the military is not doing anything on the borders. Well, the military, strictly speaking, cannot deploy itself. It has to be ordered. Every single order a soldier gets. When I got my orders to deploy from Vietnam to Germany, that came from the commander-in-chief. That order originated with him, even though he didn't have nothing to do with it. He had no knowledge of who I was, and he had no knowledge who issued me the order on paper. But it came from him. Everything the armed forces, if a guy is cleaning a latrine, The order given to him to clean that latrine comes from the authority of the commander-in-chief through the Constitution. So if we're going to ask our armed forces, to do this, we have to understand we are breaking completely with every tradition that armed forces have been organized under since 1787 when the Constitution was adopted. So it's a tremendous thing we'd be asking of them. But I hate to admit this, Joe. It may be necessary. But it's awesome to think of it if it should be.
Yeah.
Well said, sir. And I might say that I'm glad that somebody understands the law and protocol. And I can't talk outside of my box, but I can ask a question. How do you know that that hasn't been done already?
What has been done? You mean the military has decided to make a self-directed political action?
No, they've been given orders by the proper people in authority, is my question. How do you know that they haven't? And I'm not saying they have.
I don't, actually.
I'm just saying,
I really
how
don't.
Do you know that they haven't?
Yeah, I couldn't say whether they have or haven't. I know that under the Constitution, all the authority for the armed forces rests with the commander-in-chief. There's not a single member of Congress or the Senate who can give any order to any member of the armed forces unless, of course, they are in the armed forces by dint of being in the reserves of the National Guard. Only the commander-in-chief can order military units to move, deploy, go fight somebody, or whatever.
There's a law of nature, and nature's God. And my mother told me this from years and years, and probably your mother did too. I brought you into this world. I'll take you out. So the people created Studebaker. And Studebaker no longer is a car company.
Sure.
But that entity came and went. And the people that created it marched on.
Well, one of the things that
don't interrupt me. Please, let me finish. So, name another major corporation that's come and gone in our lifetime. There's been many of them. Corporations, Toys R Us, different ones are having struggled or closing down. So, I mean, why should a corporation that exercises control by fear and dominance with no lawful standing, and how do you get rid of that entity that once they got you by the tail? And so the way you do it is you take away their money, and you take away their standing, and you take away their support by the public. And all these things have been accomplished through the efforts of many people throughout generations. It goes back. I heard about the military-industrial complex in the 50s from Ike. It's the same bulldog. And so, yes, we have a lot to be concerned about.
I've got another private caller here who wants to interject
here real
quick.
That we aren't prepared to shoulder the responsibility of liberty like our forefathers intended for it to be. But back to my original question, I wouldn't be so sure that maybe what you described earlier and my response was, how do you know that that hasn't been done? So I'll leave that question.
All right. All right. Let me bring in another caller who's been waiting here. Go ahead, Derek, private caller.
Good evening. This is Dr. Peter Paul Ventura. How are you doing, Joseph?
Okay. Yeah, Peter. Yep. I can't take your call right now. I apologize for that, Peter. You're not. I can't take your call right now. I'm sorry. I've got somebody else here on the line here who has to interject here. I've got somebody 336 here. He's from the U.S. He's actually a Marine. He wants to come on. 336. Go ahead. I'm gonna unmute you. Go ahead. Go ahead. 336. You've been waiting 22 minutes. I apologize for that. Can you hear me? All right, I lost him. All right, I can't get him either. My call board was full there. I apologize. To the guys that are waiting out there, the callers, I apologize. I've got a good panel already on here. Connecticut, are you still there with me? Connecticut? I've still got Connecticut on there, right? Are you still with me?
Yeah, I'm listening.
203? Okay, good. I still got you. Okay, and I got someone there from Boston, Massachusetts still. Okay, that's about all the callers I could take right now. So Okay, so I apologize for the other people. Okay, go ahead, Governor and Sarge. I'm sorry. I had a lot of people wanting to jump in. I apologize to those who couldn't get in. I can only handle so many callers in a chat room. I can't get anybody else in there. There was only two people left in there. That, for some reason, everybody got bumped off, but that's okay. Go ahead, Sarge and Governor. Interesting conversation.
Yeah, well, I just
you know,
like
what
the
military is going
to
do. Go ahead.
The Governor just said a moment ago, and that is that, you know, he was talking about, well, you know, the entities come and go and they rise and fall, and that's certainly true. And one of the most important philosophers of liberty in the history of the world is a gentleman named John Locke. He was an Enlightenment thinker. And he espoused the theory of the natural law right of rebellion. It espoused it as part of the concept of the law. And that when tyranny and tyrants transgress the natural laws of liberty, then human beings, as part of human nature and nature's God, have a right to rebellion. So I suppose that's a last resort to consider if you're a Lockean. But nonetheless, that idea is out there, and I don't know if the governor is necessarily going that way or not. But I certainly recognize that, well, truth and that possibility.
Yeah. Go ahead, Governor.
Well, in my world, I try to align myself with a perspective using the Word of God and the events going on around me and try to get a positional reading in that aspect. And I do believe that the wise man will prepare for some tough times ahead, because I believe that when the good people that have had enough decide they're not going to give up their firearms or whatever kind of stuff they're going to throw at us, we're going to be forced into the corner where we will finally draw a line in the sand and say enough's enough. And that's inevitable. We fed that lion, and it's big, and it's looking to destroy, and it's going to come for us. But I believe that we can react as part of the solution to part of the problem. And I've been watching this 10-year plan unfold for 10 years, and it's working just like we said it was going to work, Joe. And we're getting to that point. And so I'm looking forward to it. And the control and the flag officers, the commanders, as illustrated earlier, I just have another question.
Sure.
What if they were AWOL? What if they were AWOL? Couldn't be reached. All of a sudden, the chain of command looks different. So, you know, there's a lot of twists and turns in here, folks.
You mean, now let me clarify what you're saying so I make sure I understand the implications of what you say. Are you saying that they're absent because they have absented themselves, or somehow they have been removed from the chain of command? I mean, I'm talking
there
about deliberately absenting themselves.
Well, if you were facing the court-martial and hadn't been arrested yet, you might be on the run.
Okay, I got you. I get it. Okay. I get it. All right. Well, that means they would have to come to some sort of introspective moment where they realize they are facing such a thing. Right now,
I got someone from the Black Lives Matter movement that wants to queue in, but I think I'm going to let them stay on the side there for now, because I don't want to end it. I don't want to interrupt a very good conversation that we're having right now between you, the governor, and you, Sarge. I think this is very important subjects that we're talking about. I'll leave it up to you guys at the end here. Okay, go ahead there, guys.
Yeah, well, I'd just like to finish up what I was saying, but I'd be happy to entertain somebody from Black Lives Matter if they want to have a rational discussion. But I'd just like to say this, that I would think that at some point these people think I think one of two things. They think they're either in the catbird seat right now and they're cruising toward a fundamental realignment of the United States, and particularly the United States Armed Forces, along the lines of a Soviet model, with political commissar officers to direct the thinking of their soldiers, or they're very, very nervous about what they're doing, and they're nervous, and I've heard rumblings about soldiers who are being forced to attend these indoctrination classes protesting as to why they're focusing on a relatively ineffectual riot on January 6th. It was not an insurrection. Not one of these people arrested has been charged with insurrection. I've looked at every single charge sheet against every single individual that the Department of Justice has posted. Not one of them has been charged with insurrection. Disorderly conduct, trespass, charges like that, yes. Insurrection, no. So, you know, and these soldiers are asking this question. Why are they raising all this fuss about a relatively ineffectual riot, which is what it was, as compared to literally months of insurrectionist activity to include seizing portions of cities, declaring them autonomous and free from the jurisdiction of both the local, state, and federal government, and laying siege to federal courthouses. They're asking, why isn't that worthy of this sort of attention and condemnation as insurrection when you are just making a mountain out of this relative molehill on what happened on January the 6th?
Yeah.
I think they may
yeah,
be insecure
true.
About that, too. And I think now they say, well, we better consolidate this and get these people who are doing wrong think, you know, that newspeak from 1984. Ingsoc
yeah.
is cracking down, baby. We've always been at war with East Asia.
And, Sarge, you were on the NSM platform last night. I want to ask both of you gentlemen this. The National Socialist Movement is a growing movement across the country right now. Now, is this a dangerous idea that's being proposed? Now, they're labeled this and that, but we can't get into what the narrative of the media says. What I mean, they have a lot of good points. They have a lot of good points that match up with the Constitutional Republic and the Republic's foundations and whatnot. Before I get to closing thoughts here to the podcast, what do you think about that real quick, Sarge, this National Socialist Movement?
Well, the problem I have with it is not where they align with the Constitution, because obviously there's no controversy there. I think socialism in and of itself, no matter how it's branded, is inherently at odds with the Constitution. Not literally, but certainly figuratively, socialism is not something that really is given stripped, at least at the federal level, by the Constitution, because the Constitution is a document of enumerated power, meaning if the Constitution is not granted to an entity certain authority to do something, then it's not supposed to be there. Socialism is pretty much a grant of unlimited power to regulate everything and provide for everyone without regard to an enumeration of specific authority. So I think any
yeah.
sort of socialism is inherently at odds with the Constitution of the United States. Certainly in spirit, if not the letter.
Yeah, and they sure. And I mean, I'm looking into it, and I support a lot of their ideals. I'm a little uncomfortable with the ungodly part, where you know they don't support any type of foundation of God, because you brought up the Constitution as far as you know it's for a moral and religious people. But then again, we have free will, you know. So therefore, people don't want to believe in the Lord or believe in God or a foundation of God as America is. But if you look at every single country around the world that has rejected God or who worships the wrong God, look where they're at. You know, look what's happened to them throughout history. You know. And I do agree with them about a majority of a lot of the corruptness that's happening is through a lot of the Zionist Jews. You know, I do agree with that. But I also agree with the Jesuit problem. A lot of the Jesuits are the problem. But I don't want to pick out one group of people and say they need to be gotten rid of on the planet Earth. That's wrong. You know, we're all human beings on planet Earth. We got to work together. What we have to get rid of is sin and hate and evil. That's what we have to get rid of. You know, so that's kind of like my stand on that. I'm sure you'd agree with that, right, Sarge?
Well, look, our declaration, our founding, the primary founding document, pledges a belief in a transcendent creator God that endows us with rights that no man can take away, no matter how tyrannical, no matter how corrupt, no matter how slothful. that cannot be taken from us because that man, no man, granted us to this. We got them by virtue of being born as a human being. That's what's
right.
so important about it, to give a transcendent nature to our liberty. That's why I'm always worried about anyone, and I'm kind of an agnostic, believe it or not, but I understand
okay.
the purposes
okay.
of our government, our Constitution, our freedom. We have to accept, or we should accept, or at least understand the concept of a transcendent nature of a creator God that made us endowed with our liberties just by virtue of being born a human being. No one can take them away.
That's true. Governor, you want to answer that question about the, because, you know, I've been going, you know, I'm looking into that, and I just believe that there has to be a change. We're a changing and an adaptive people as a human race, and we have to, you know, and I think National Socialists, their National Socialist ideas are a good way to attack the other socialists. I like that, you know, because they're a definite threat to any type of humanity or freedom. Because, I mean, you know, I sure don't want to see America turn into a Venezuela. What do you think, Governor?
Well, I looked at history for that answer. Our very first pilgrims, the first year, were socialists. And they quickly realized that the young, willing young men to till the fields and do the heavy lifting weren't as eager and didn't work as hard when they had to a socialistic environment, because that's just human nature. It's,
okay.
You know, when they turned the corner and gave individual plots to people, then the people owned the fruits of their harvest, of their labor. And there was incentive in that, and it wasn't long before we were exporting. And so why does someone want to go down a philosophical debate that's already proven in actuality, and if you stop to think about it, in human nature, and you say, well, there are slothful people in human nature. There are people that have intentionally been handicapped through nutrition, through education, through opportunity, and yes, that's not fair to them. And so,
okay.
really, when we get down to the bottom line, I think that the majority of those people truly want the same things. They just have a different perspective on how to get it. And socialism is a proven failure. And it's said that if you're psychologically handicapped, you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results. And
okay.
I like,
all right, that's fair answer.
I like being responsible for the seeds that I plant. Thank you, sir.
Yeah. Okay. All right, that's a fair answer. I mean, I don't want to, like I said, I've got Dr. Peter Ventura here. I'm going to bring him on real quick. He's a pastor of Bible Believers Baptist Church. I'm going to bring him on. We had a very interesting conversation here, military, republic. Now we've got the, I guess you could say, the Christian point of view here. So let's go ahead, Dr. Peter Ventura, real quick. Go ahead. We got about 30 minutes left, actually.
I have Brother Steve on this line also. Steve, if you press 1 on your phone, you should be able to get into the host queue.
Okay, yeah, he has to press 1.
Okay, I want to read.
Thank you, Peter.
I'd like to read something to y'all. This is how far we've come from God in our government. Now, this is from the 8th Congress, the first session, Washington, Monday, January 6th, 1947, okay, and this is the prayer that was offered by the Reverend Peter Marshall, Doctor of Divinity, before Congress in the 8th and 81st Congress in 1947. Okay, I just want to read something to you. It's a short paragraph. This is what he prayed in Washington on Monday, January 6th. Listen to the words. You won't hear this there. O Lord our God, if ever we need thy wisdom and thy guidance, it is now, as the Congress begins a new session, standing upon the threshold of a new year fraught with so many dangerous opportunities. We pray that thou will bless these men chosen by the people of this nation, for thou knowest them, their needs, their motives, their hopes, and their fears. Lord Jesus, put thine arm around them to give them strength, and speak to them to give them wisdom greater than their own. May they hear thy voice and seek thy guidance. May they remember that thou art concerned about what is said and done here, and may they have clear conscience before thee, that they need fear no man. Bless each of us according to our deepest need, and use us for thy glory. We humbly ask in Jesus' name, amen. That was said in Congress. That's how far the United States of America has come from God and the Lord, and then the country wants to be blessed. We've got, you know, when you looked at Obama, when he put his hand up, there was a Quran up there. Okay, so this is where we're at, and there's no God consciousness. That's the problem with America. There is no God consciousness. We have gone away from God. And so God brought a judgment upon this country, and the country didn't recognize it. God took away everything that man put in front of him and set it aside. He allowed this plague to happen, and so what did they do? They shut down what? You put sports ahead of God, shut down all the sporting events. Put the gambling, shut the casinos down. Want to eat food before God and not even thank him? He shut the restaurants down. You want to send your children to school and teach them and take the Bible out of school and the Ten Commandments? He shut the schools down. And he shut the government down for a while. You see? So this what our nation needs to do is to repent and to turn back to God and to get on their knees and ask God to forgive this nation for its sins. A nation that would kill millions and millions of babies. Somebody who would say they were a Democrat and not even think about what it really represents. Because what it represents is the blood of millions of babies all around the world. We have a border crisis. We have a border crisis. They want to stop building a wall, yet they're sending money to Saudi Arabia and Yemen to build walls. Does it make sense? Because it doesn't make sense to me. And what they're doing is calling evil good and good evil. And all we have to do is sit back and just let them keep doing it. Because at some point, somebody better stand up and say something. But it's got to start within the Christian heart. It's got to start within the heart of man. And the fellow that's on here that said that we are endowed with certain rights by our Creator, that was recognized by the founders of this country. And it was recognized. That's why they left England. That's why we got out of Europe, so that we could freely serve the God. And America is the only nation that chose God. Israel was chosen by God, the Bible teaches, but the United States of America, we chose God as our moral standard. And, you know, we've allowed, Satan is a progressive. I tell the story where you look and you see way back in the cartoons when we were kids, and I'm 64 years old, and there's Elmer Fudd and Bugs Bunny running around with a skirt on a dress chasing Elmer Fudd, and we were all laughing. And then next it was Mr. So-and-so who was the, you know, the chauffeur, and he was gay, and the butler. And now look where we are today. You see, we didn't stop it then. We didn't say no. Now we have these fags reading, and these gays are reading to our children, you know, cross-dressers coming into the schools in California throughout the country, reading to the children about Mary has two mommies. And it's supposed to be progressive. This is you know, the cancel culture. Well, where does it stop? Well, it has to stop first with the intervention of God. If God doesn't intervene, because this nation's headed for a judgment, and it's not evolution, it's devolution. We're headed down, and it's progressive, and we need to stop it. There's a war going on. It's a civil war. It's not being fought with weapons, conventional weapons. It's being fought on the news. It's being fought on the internet. It's being fought on the radio waves. And we were psyoped. We've been psyoped over and over and over with dates and times and places and things that are going to happen. And people are still waiting for things that are going to happen. You know, the Trump story, he's going to get back in office. March 21st, he's still in control of the army. All these broadcasts and all these things taking people. And what it's done is it's turned a lot of people away from a lot of positive movements that people who were doing things for the country and were really planning on doing things, it's turned hundreds and thousands and millions of people away because they said, you know what, there ain't a bit of truth to any of you. You don't know what's true anymore. So the only thing I can tell everybody is today is the day of salvation. If you're not right with Jesus Christ, get your heart right, repent of your sins, and pray for our nation. And let God intervene. And God will open the door and the manner and the way, and the people who have the know-how will be able to step through that door. That's what I have to say.
All right. You got a friend there, Steve, you said. You want to say something real quick? We still got a little bit of time. We'll be going into overtime here on the show, so if you hang up, you won't get back in. So go ahead there. You said Steve is your friend there. Then I'm going to give closing thoughts.
Steve,
Go ahead.
Yeah, Peter said it right in the head. You know, you got to be a complete idiot to be a Democrat in this country. The babies we've killed, the progression that this country's gone into, we got, like you said, we've got the Episcopal Church has gay priests now. It's insane what's going on. We're like the laughing stock of the world. And he's 100% right. Our problem started when we kicked God out of everything. Look at the way things are today. I mean, I have a 23-year-old daughter, and I pray to God every night that she's going to come home, because I don't know if she's going to come home because of the craziness out there. I mean, when we were kids, we can go trick or treating. We went to the houses, we didn't even know the people. Today, you can't even go out to a house. You have to have it at the firehouse. It's ridiculous. When are people going to get united? The Republican Party is, I mean, I'm a Republican. What the heck is wrong with this party? They can't seem to be united. And we're getting run right over. The churches are getting completely run over, and Satan's having a field day. And, you know, something's got to happen, and I'm ready to jump on the boat. If anybody's got good ideas, I'm standing strong with Peter.
Well, all right, closing thoughts to the podcast here. I'll start with you, Governor, and then I'll go to Sarge. Because if you missed the podcast, we've been military options were on the table. And I think Sarge summed up very, very well. But I'll go with you first, Governor. Go ahead.
Well, very well said, Dr. Ventura. Yes, it all begins and ends at the cross with our Heavenly Father. And so we got a problem here on Earth. Because we got a problem in our spiritual life.
Amen.
And the government represents the people. And so the corrupt people amongst us were elected to positions of power, and we're getting what we deserve because we neglected to shoulder the responsibilities of liberty and to promote the teachings of the church. And so we're reaping that harvest. But we all know we want to come out of her. So my question that everybody needs to be thinking about is, now that we got our answer to prayer, where do we go from here? What does that future look like? Am I willing and able to participate as leadership in various forms to lead the people that look to me for guidance? And you're accountable to your Heavenly Father for that answer. Thank you, Joel, for allowing me the opportunity to speak to you and the people tonight. I've enjoyed the conversation, and I'll yield till next time. Good night, my friend.
All right. Thank you, Governor. I appreciate it. Governor of the Free State of Colorado. Connecticut, first, before I get to Sarge, because I want to give Sarge the most. He's very well. He's the military, and he's going to sum it up here for us. But Connecticut, you want to say something real quick?
I'm sure he's going to sum it up quite well. I'll be as quick as I can. I've mentioned about watching the news. And I find it entertaining. I think you should watch it and turn it off and then laugh like hell. I don't mean to disrespect anybody's opinion here or them, because they're all well-versed in what they're saying, and they say it quite well. I say watch what people do, not what they say. The caller before the last one, what are we going to do? Well, it's been said before on this show. We're dealing with two parties. We're dealing with good cops and bad cops, and they both have the same agenda. They're just not letting you know about it. What are we going to do? Pay attention to what they're doing and get the hell out of their way. I'm done.
Well, I don't know about getting out of their way. I think it's time to stop them. But, Sarge, go ahead, man. Sarge, you still with me?
I'm not a theologian by any means whatsoever, but I do think I have a basic understanding of the power of prayer. And I think prayer, first and foremost, is, according to everything I've learned, is a reverence, to help establish a reverence for the divine and an acknowledgement of the divine. And secondly, and perhaps most importantly for our secular affairs here on earth, is that it helps us to marshal within ourselves and others the spiritual and psychological forces to do what must be done to better our condition and even to help us survive. That is, for me, the power of prayer. And if those resources can be marshaled through the power of prayer and people praying in concert. And then, as God says in the good book, God will then help those who help themselves. Then I say, yes, let's get out there and start helping ourselves through that power of prayer and with that power of prayer. And what needs to be done? Well, I don't know. Like I said earlier, I gave you all the three options that I think we're going to have to start considering as to what, as to how we're going to reconcile ourselves with this impending state of affairs, this impending state of tyranny and unconstitutionality. But I know this much, and I want all of y'all to spread the word just to get the idea in people's heads that we don't bow to tyranny. April 19th is coming up very shortly, and it ain't tax day or freedom from tax day. It's the Battle of Lexington and Concord. When the British sparked the catalyst that created this country as an act of gun control. That's all I got to say. April 19th,
hey, Sarge, real quick, before you go. Sarge, before you go, just give your credentials real quick to the pastors that logged in a little bit late here. Just give your credentials. So this way they know the background that you have, because you were very well spoken throughout the podcast and your military perspective. We had a couple others on from the military also that were on here. Go ahead, Sarge, if you don't mind.
Yeah,
you're in the National Guard for 22 years?
I was 4.5 years active duty, including combat duty in Vietnam. I had a tour of duty in Germany after I left Vietnam. I was at the Armor School as a tank gunner instructor at Fort Knox. I got out, went to the National Guard. I was in the National Guard in a military police battalion. I got called up for Operation Iraqi Freedom and the first Gulf War. I was an Illinois State policeman for 26 years, worked in Chicago and Cook County, and I retired from that. So, you know, and I was a police firearms instructor, SWAT instructor, firearms instructor, and so on and so forth, the usual stuff. And, you know, like, I also am an automobile mechanic. I used to own an auto repair shop with another Army buddy of mine. We got out of the Army, so I'm an auto mechanic and all of that. But and I used to be a guest host on a radio talk show in Chicago, WLS AM, with the great Tom Roser, who was one of the great conservatives in the Midwest at the time. So, you know, I've been around the block a little ways. I know a little bit about some of this stuff, and, you know, I'd like to share it with people. But I love this country. I love it. It's the greatest country in the history of mankind. It's flawed. It ain't perfect. It never will be perfect. It's committed great sins, but it's also considered infinitely greater acts of nobility, courage, and inspiration. And I want to preserve that part of this country for our posterity and our children. And I think if it's lost, it will not be regained anytime soon.
Peter, you came in late to the podcast, so you missed a lot of intel that we did give on this show, but you can listen to it in archive. You want to say anything else real quick?
I'll archive it. I'd like to thank you for your Sarge for your service, and to the Free Governor of Colorado. It's always a pleasure to be on and listen to the wisdom. Sarge, my wife is a 20-year Navy vet. She was the first female commander of a VFW in California. She was the state president of the Military Order of the Cooties, which is the VFW honor degree. We're down in Arlington every November 4th. Thanks to Obama, we're no longer at the Tomb of the Unknown, but we're at the Argonne Cross, which is Navy. So we thank you for your service and appreciate it. And I've spent a lot of time around vets. I'm a Navy vet. And one thing I can tell you is that freedom is not free. It's buried in the ground, and that what I do know is you and men like you and the men that I know, that we serve as hospital workers at the VA office. My wife was a servant for many years. We find that you are America, and we stand with you as patriots, and we love our country, and we'll die for our country. So I want to thank
you
for your service, Free Governor. I want to thank you, Joe, for giving me the opportunity to come on. And to have some voice, and to let God have away. So we appreciate that. And I'm going to sit quiet and on the side and yield.
All right. All right. We got 10 minutes left. I'm going to let Alex Jones take us out, actually. So we'll let Alex Jones here, pre-recorded, bring him to 10 minutes, message here. So go ahead and wrap it up. God bless the Republic.
Callers call in with breaking huge news that we then ferret out and confirm, and it's always some new horrible violation of rights and freedoms going on covertly and illegally by the federal government at the local level. But nevertheless, we are going to your phone calls. I mean, I'm not here on this radio show trying to find evidence of government corruption. There's so much of it. I'm exhausted mentally, psychologically, spiritually. I don't even want to learn more. I don't even want to know more. I'm like the general public. I'm so deep down this rat hole, this Alice in Wonderland system, that I can't believe it. I can't believe the bold corruption. Now they're saying a new banker bailout, trillions more robbing everything. I mean, And then I see fake revolutions that are controlled by the government. I mean, this thing in Massachusetts is wonderful on the surface. I mean, you've got a Democrat-controlled seat that's never been Republican, and it looks like the Republican's going to win, taking Ted Kennedy's seat, and that shows that the ultra-liberal, brainwashed collectivist in Massachusetts have finally had enough and know that Obama completely betrayed them. And so they're hoping Republicans won't betray them. But the Democrats don't care. They say, we don't care if it destroys our party. We're going to pass government takeover of health care because they're bought and paid for by big banks, and they're going to get multi-million dollar jobs in the private sector as part of their payoffs, and they don't care. They're bank robbers. They don't care if you don't like them. And the Republicans are going to betray you as they take over the House and Senate in the next 2 to 3 years, probably this year. And you watch, just like when the Democrats got in 2006 and the wars expanded, Obama gets in. So we've got to ask ourselves, how do we fix this when both parties, whatever party's out of power, poses as if they're patriots? The Republican Party sounds like Alex Jones. I mean, Dick Armey's talking about world government, world socialism, new world order. Glenn Beck is. But what is Glenn Beck's solution? An excise tax and a sales tax? I drove into work this morning and tuned in to him. I tuned in for 5 minutes, spot-checking different shows. And he was saying, we've got to have new taxes. He had Cramer on from CNBC. Oh, we need new taxes. Oh, it's so conservative to pay off this debt. It's an illegal debt to foreign banks. We don't need to pay it. When they've got the supposed patriots pushing for new taxes, ladies and gentlemen, do you need me to explain to you that that's why he's Benedict Arnold? I love Napolitano. I'm not going after Beck because he's got the number one TV show on cable news. I would love it if he was a real deal. He's not. He's got a little bit of Napolitano they spice up here and there because he's for real, and then they can get the whole libertarian Ron Paul audience with it. And we need to put pressure on Beck to knock it off. He's got all these conservative zombies out there now chanting, we need tax raise. We need new taxes. No, 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 no! That is not conservative. Every time I tune into the TV show or the radio show, he's calling for taxes. He must be doing this every 5 minutes. I literally watch YouTube clips of him 2 or 3 times a week of select things he does. And a lot of times we have multiple TVs on, so people can just monitor. We have 2 TVs in the studio, TV in the coffee room, TVs back in the hallways on different C-SPAN, different news channels. And I'll be in there getting coffee at 10 o'clock at night or something, and they'll be re-airing back, or it'll be 5 o'clock and I'm up here and they got him on. And I'll be sitting there, and it's just every time I see the deception, I see the sucker punch, I see the Benedict Arnold. I mean, and I don't want to be enemies with Beck. It's not good for my radio show. It's not good for the success of what I do, but it is good for the country, and so I'm going to ram him. I'm going to ram him politically, just like you think it was popular to come out day one when they staged 9/11 and document how it was an inside job lost more than half my stations? You think it was good to attack Obama when he had an 85, 86, 87, depending on the poll approval rating? I rammed him. I rammed him the day he got elected as a traitor. I rammed him as soon as he got in office. You think it was popular to come out day one with the Obama deception and say he was a complete liar and betrayer? Now, 6-8 months later, I'm looking good, aren't I? Because I told the truth. I was right again. And I told you Obama's bad, and I told you George Bush was bad, and I'm telling you, Glenn Beck is bona fide evil. All right, I'm going to shut up. Just a word to the wise is sufficient. He called for the banker bailout. And every time I mention that, I get emails saying I'm a liar. Oh, really? Just go to YouTube and type in Glenn Beck supports bailout, or go to the video clip, Glenn Beck, neocon, not libertarian. It has the clips of him calling Ron Paul a kook, a nut, saying arrest Ron Paul supporters. They've got new clips of him a few months ago doing it. He is a double-talking piece of trash. Look, I hate Chris Matthews. I can't stand him. He makes me sick. He is an absolute piece of trash, a race-baiting person injecting racial division. You know, if you think Obama's a socialist, that's code word for the N-word. You know, really evil stuff. But at least he's evil and out in the open as an American-hating piece of trash. All right, I said I was going to cover Haiti and get to other news and take your calls. It's just, I can't stand phoniness. And I can't stand watching people getting conned. I cannot abide it. Hey, you want to get betrayed, though? Go ahead. Just like you moron Democrats. You are so stupid. Of course Obama was a shill. Of course he was a con man. Of course he betrayed everything he said he'd do. Look at his donors. Look at who he appointed. A year out during the election, he was saying he'd end the war immediately, end wiretapping, end secret arrest, end torture, end all the wars, not hire any lobbyists. And I said on air, I said, if this guy's for real, they will assassinate him.
There was a lawyer once. His name was Francis Scott Key. He penned a song that I'm sure you're aware of. You've seen it. It's in most hymnals throughout our churches. It's called the National Anthem. It is our song as an American. We go, however, to a ball game. We stand in our church services, and we sing the words of that song, and they float over our minds and our lips, and we don't even realize what we're singing. Most of us have memorized it as a child, but we've never really thought about what it means. Let me tell you a story. Francis Scott Key was a lawyer in Baltimore. The colonies were engaged in vicious conflict with the mother country, Britain. Because of this conflict and the protractedness of it, they had accumulated prisoners on both sides. The American colonies had prisoners and the British had prisoners. And the American government initiated a move. They went to the British and they said, "Let us negotiate for the release of these prisoners." They said, "We want to send a man out to discuss this with you." They were holding the American prisoners in boats about 1,000 yards offshore. And they said, "We want to send a man by the name of Francis Scott Key. He will come out and negotiate to see if we can make a mutual exchange." On the appointed day, in a rowboat, he went out to this boat and he negotiated with the British officials. And they reached a conclusion that men could be exchanged on a one-for-one basis. Francis Scott Key, jubilant with the fact that he'd been successful, went down below in the boats, and what he found was a cargo hold full of humanity, men. And he said, "Men, I've got news for you tonight. You're free." He said, "Tonight I have negotiated successfully your return to the colonies." He said, "You'll be taken out of this boat, out of this filth, out of your chains." As he went back up on board to arrange for their passage to the shore, the admiral came and he said, "We have a slight problem." He said, "We will still honor our commitment to release these men, but it'll be merely academic after tonight. It won't matter." And Francis Scott Key said, "What do you mean?" He said, well, Mr. Key, he said, tonight we have laid an ultimatum upon the colonies. Your people will either capitulate and lay down the colors of that flag that you think so much of, or you see that fort right over there, Fort Henry? He said, we're going to remove it from the face of the earth. He said, how are you going to do that? He said, if you will, scan the horizon of the sea. And as he looked, he could see hundreds of little dots. And he said, that's the entire British war fleet. He said, all of the gunpowder, all of the armament is being called upon to demolish that fort. It will be here within striking distance in a matter of about 2.5 hours. He said, the war is over. These men would be free anyway. He said, you can't shell that fort. He said, that's a large fort. He said, it's full of women and children. He says, it's predominantly not a military fort. He said, don't worry about it. They said, we've left them a way out. And he said, what's that? He said, do you see that flag way up on the rampart? He said, we have told them that if they will lower that flag, the shelling will stop immediately. And we'll know that they've surrendered, and you'll now be under British rule. Francis Scott Key went down below and told the men what was about to happen. And they said, how many ships? He said, hundreds. The ships got closer. Francis Scott Key went back up on top and he said, men, I'll shout down to you what's going on as we watch. As twilight began to fall, and as the haze hung over the ocean as it does at sunset, suddenly the British war fleet unleashed. He says, the sound was deafening. There were so many guns that there were no reliefs. He said, it was absolutely impossible to talk or hear. He said, suddenly the sky, although dark, was suddenly lit. And he says, from down below, all he could hear the men, the prisoners, saying was, tell us where the flag is. What have they done with the flag? Is the flag still flying over the rampart? Tell us. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours into the shelling. Every time the bomb would explode and it would be close to the flag, they could see the flag in the illuminated red glare of that bomb. And Francis Scott Key would report down to the men below, it's still up. It's not down. The admiral came and he said, your people are insane. He said, what's the matter with them? He said, don't they understand this is an impossible situation? Francis Scott Key said, he remembered what George Washington had said. He said, the thing that sets the American Christian apart from all other people in the world is he will die on his feet before he'll live on his knees. The admiral said, we have now instructed all of the guns to focus on...